I felt like I had totally allowed my personal life and my social life to fall apart a little bit. And I had to, like, I ended up, this was the fun thing. I ended up taking three of my closest friends to Tulum and just like paying for all of them to be like, let's just all go. Cause I feel like I need to like reconnect.
You can't brush past the baller moveness of what you just said.
It was one of the best things I've ever done.
You took all of your friends to Tulum. You
were all like, three of them.
I got it. I got this. Daddy's got it.
Daddy's got it. Ah! You know, they say women shouldn't be bossy.
We're out here reclaiming that word. What's so wrong with being the boss? I'm Tara Reid, the CEO of a multi-million dollar edtech business.
And I'm Katie Gatti Tossan, better known as Money with Katie on the internet.
At our core, we're driven by a shared ambition to build our own mini empires.
Welcome to Bossy. So I feel like what we often talk about with success and the kind of the territory of things working well for you and going the way that you want them to is all the good things that come with that. But I don't feel like there's often a conversation around when you experience resistance from people in your life or the way that your relationships can somehow be impacted by you getting
family and friends,
like romantic relationships too. Partner. I think that there's a lot to unpack there. And I'm curious if you've had any interesting kind of family dynamics change as a result of the success that you've personally had.
Well, I think in general, my family has been pretty supportive of my entrepreneurship. I do think there's areas where, like, I'm now getting to a place, I think it's just now happening, where there are some areas where, like, for example, my mom has absolutely no idea what I'm doing. Like, she just, like, doesn't
get it. What did your parents
do? She's not supportive. She just doesn't know. So my parents are both entrepreneurial in some way. So my
interesting.
Mom, are your parents entrepreneurs?
No. Mine, well, you tell me and then I don't want to cut you off.
Okay, well, my mom is an accountant. She's a CPA and she has her own practice.
So
Yeah, and she works with a lot of different types of clients, but I think before I was born, she worked a lot in like entertainment and she was Prince's first controller at Paisley Park and like
did
entertainment stuff. And now she does some of that still, but she like, you know, has her own business.
Yeah. Right?
And so my dad is he's had an interesting career. You can't say he's retired. He doesn't want to say retired. he rejects that word. He pivoted.
He pivoted. That's great.
He's like really upset if you say retired. Because I think to him, retired means you're not doing anything.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
He's like, I pivoted. So he, growing up, he had sort of two different careers. He was a chief operating officer at businesses. So he worked at like the LA Urban League growing up and then an efficient energy company. Huh. And then also is a jazz musician. So he plays stand-up bass. And I think for him, business and art are like two separate things that he does. To me, they're the same thing. It's all one.
I was going to ask, because I feel like that, knowing that that's kind of the family dynamic that you grew up in and what you saw your parents doing, that actually makes a lot of sense for how you turned out and what you're interested in.
Wait, how so?
Well, the business and art thing for one thing. But also, I just think if you see your parents running businesses of their own, it's kind of like when you have two doctors and then the kid grows up and it's like, well, obviously I'm going to be a doctor. Like, I think that you kind of take on
Interesting. Well,
and I think for me that has been true in the sense that my parents both worked for like big corporations. And then my mom did end up leaving work when I was younger and became a teacher. But like my dad worked for the same company for 30 years.
Yeah.
So that was the example I saw. And now he got a great pension out of it. Like he was rewarded for that loyalty in a way that like if I were at a company for 30 years today, I would not be rewarded for it.
The game is so different now. Like, it used to be that you like work for a company, they take care of you.
Yeah.
You have a long career and they take care of you. That's like so different for like folks our age, folks that are younger. Like the game's not
that anymore. I don't think that my parents knew. I didn't know that. I don't think they really realized how much things had changed. He may have a little bit because I think he would see new people coming in and not getting pension, like not getting the same benefits packages that he was getting. But in any case, I think I saw that and just thought, oh, okay, so that's how you have a career. Like that's what you do is you find one place, you are loyal to them, you work there your whole life. And like that was for all intents and purposes, that was kind of my plan a little bit going into my career. And it was
so what did your parents think about when you changed the plan? We're like, psych, I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna be an entrepreneur.
Dude, that was an interesting I think that they were supportive. I think there were a lot of moments where they were kind of like nervous on my behalf. Like, I think that they didn't quite see, well, first of all, because
that's a good distinction, by the way, like someone can be actively not supportive, don't do that. And they also can just be like, I'm nervous.
I think that they didn't get it. So to your point about, I think like the idea of making money off of like a blog and social media and digital they were kind of like, huh? Like, how are you, what do you mean? Like
my mom's favorite line is like, girl, you're just messing around on the computer. And I'm like, actually, I'm running business.
It's the fake, the fake email job. Yeah, I think that they didn't really get it. And I think that was part of it. And I think that there was an element of security that I think they were nervous about on my behalf, too, of like, well, and that's
how did they express that nervousness?
Mostly asking a lot of questions.
Okay.
And just being like, well, you're going to keep, like, I remember, oh, that's actually interesting. I remember when I was still doing when I still worked for Southwest and was doing money with Katie on the side, she would always say things on the phone like, just remember Southwest is the main thing, okay? Like, just remember, you got to put that first. Remember, you cannot jeopardize this job for what you're doing. Like, that's great that you have that. Meanwhile, money with Katie is making more in a month than Southwest is paying me in a year.
It's not the main
thing. It was not the main thing. And she was like, just remember. And I think it was kind of the like, there is, in my mind, a bit of a misconception around the safety of a corporate job. And that, yet you can always go get another one. That's true. If you're marketable and you have skill sets that are in demand, yes, you can always go get a different job.
Well, but
that
paycheck, you
that you're hired at will. That paycheck can be taken away from you in 2 seconds. So I think that this idea that, like, that is always the safer route is in some ways true, in some ways false, but I think
that feels really clear to me. And I think it's maybe because I got laid off from a job when Microsoft laid off 80,000 people pretty early on in my career, where I was like, oh, the whole fallacy that this is like truly secure and like they're going to really take care of you. Like, no, when they need to adjust numbers, you can go very
your
easily.
Your headcount. You're a line on a spreadsheet.
Crossed off.
When did you know though? Like, was it, did you grow up being like, yeah, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to make money for myself. Like, was that always, when did you realize that?
A couple months before I became an entrepreneur. Like, not like that was never the plan. Like so growing up, I wanted to be a lawyer. My plan was to be an attorney.
Really?
And I think people suggested that to me because I like to argue. Like, I think that's how that happened.
Tara Spin. In the courtroom.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you're like a little manipulative. You'd be good at this. Maybe that's what it was. I don't know. But that was the plan. And I wanted to be like a social justice attorney. I think I saw my dad working at nonprofits and stuff like that. He worked at the Urban League. So like, I kind of wanted to be like him in that way.
So what happened?
And so I picked, I think I just get to do social justice in a totally different kind of way, if you know what I mean.
How? How is what you're doing now?
I think I get to just like show a different view of what like a powerful Black woman looks like, right? And I get to like create that example and let people sort of follow along in my journey. Speaking of following along in my journey though, like my parents, I think one of the things that my mom does not get about what I do now is like sharing my life. Like, yeah. I think to her, she kind of says this line and she's like, I've only seen nothing but bad come from people who share themselves publicly. And I think that that's just sort of her view. And I think in a pre-social media world, that makes so much sense.
Interesting. I was going to say social media is the reason that things can go negative so quickly.
It is the reason that things can go negative so quickly. You've seen D'Amelio show?
D'Amelio show, yeah.
Yeah, like these girls that like started doing like, they kind of like popularized this like TikTok dance style that looks like you're like,
yeah, Charlie D'Amelio dancing, but, and like, her 130 million followers.
She's got all the followers. And they do such a good job on that show of like showing, right, the negative side of putting yourself out there and how it affects just like your mental health. So when my mom says stuff like that,
there's definitely validity.
I get what she's saying, but I also think that there's so much benefit these days in like you get a lot too in putting yourself out there. And I have to probably attribute like a good amount of my success to just putting myself out there, right? Like starting a blog and just like mainly talking to myself, but like people then saying like, ooh, like I'm interested in that too. And like sharing my journey along the way, like most of my business opportunities have come from that, tweeting and being on Twitter and meeting you for this show. Like, and so I do get when she says that, I think when I think about supportiveness from my parents are pretty supportive. But I do get, I think you had a good like wording of it, the like questions, the like concern, the cautiousness. And I think actually it might be more now. I think before my parents kind of still got what I was doing because I still was at the job. So it like still made sense.
Yeah.
And I think to family too, at least to my family, the extent to which they can explain it to their friends is how
determines how comfortable they are.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think now, like my mom always says, like, I always have a really hard time explaining to people what you do. Can you tell my friend what you do? And I'm like, I teach people to build apps.
It's so interesting to me you wanted to be a social justice attorney though.
Yeah.
And like, did they like, were they supportive of that? What did they think of that goal?
Yeah, I think they were supportive. You know what's really interesting about this conversation? Like, I don't think I spent or spend that much time even thinking about it. So like, they might have not liked it. And like, I just am so in my own world.
Yo, that's
that, like, I don't really care. Like that, I don't know.
Do you have siblings?
I have two stepbrothers. We're pretty far apart.
Oh, okay.
Age.
So, okay.
So, and I definitely am like, everybody knows Tara's doing her own thing. Like, just let her do the, just, she's Tara.
So I think that that's another, so I was an only child.
Yeah.
And my parents and I were very close.
Yeah.
We were a very tight-knit little trio. And I think that so much of my identity growing up was like wanting to make them happy. And wanting to make them proud. And I think that that was why I had a bit of a hard time in the beginning when it seemed like I was doing something that they didn't necessarily approve of.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that they didn't approve of it. Again, it was just like they weren't as supportive at first in the sense of like, it was the remember Southwest is the main thing. Remember that your full-time job is the priority.
Yeah. That's
and it wasn't.
Yeah.
And so there was like this weird tension that I felt where I was kind of like, am I making a mistake? Am I making the right decision? Because so much of my, I filtered a lot of my decisions through their perspective on them and what they thought. Cause I was like, well, they know better, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it's been kind of fun to like get to the place that we are now where now I'll call and be like, I got a book deal or like I'm doing a second show. I'm going to, and like to have them be.
What's the response now?
They're just kind of amazed.
Yeah.
They're amazed, I think, which is very fun. But it took us a little bit to get there.
Yeah. I really resonate with what you're saying about like wanting to impress. Like I definitely think entrepreneurship was my shift, actually. So as I'm thinking about, like, I'm thinking about when I started my first business, I was still at Microsoft and there was like, it was a side project for a while. I think at that point, I think I stopped caring as much, but entrepreneurship was the shift for me.
Hmm.
So, and I think it was like not overnight, it was gradual. I actually can trace the progression. So for example, like it was really important in my family about like college and what college that
yes,
I went to.
Same.
My mom went to USC, you know, the rankings of universities. Mm-hmm. She did the ranking of universities. She put a line USC and said anything and above. Anything and above. And I think we have this line in our family that like your job is to just do a little bit more than I did.
Wow.
Yeah. So
what
like,
is the,
that was the expectation.
So that's, I feel like my parents cared about prestige to some degree, but I think that going to college was a given that I was going to go.
Yes.
But they had invested so much money for my college education while I was young that they were like, you're not going to have loans. You can go anywhere you want. Yeah. A lot of privilege, a lot of like, they were fully Team Katie. However, the market crashed and they lost a lot of that.
Yeah.
It didn't come back in time, really, is what I'm trying to say. And so it went from like, you can go to Harvard, we'll pay for you to go anywhere, to like, you can go to a state school with a scholarship. And I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to go to Alabama and party my ass off for 4 years. So like, is it interesting to hear that they were like, I kind of love that though, that they're like, this is, but did you feel pressure from that? Like, did you like that? Or did you feel empowered by that? Or was that like, oh my God, I have to like live up to this.
No,
now.
I was definitely into it.
Okay.
So like, I think because maybe I sort of like was raised that way. Like by the time I was high school age and like ready to like hit that, and actually it started before that. Like it was maybe in middle school was the first time it was like, all right, we're going to get into the most competitive high school that we can. And then it was like, okay, all of high school was like, we had a binder. It was like prep for college. What are the extracurriculars? Like it was a strategy.
Holy
shit. Everybody was on board and like, here's what we're doing.
Oh my God.
Operation Terra Ivy League. Maybe it wasn't Ivy League specifically, but like I went to Columbia.
Oh, no way. Yeah, I think I knew that actually. Yeah. Columbia. Wow.
I liked it.
Operation Terra Ivy League.
Yeah. And so that was kind of like the vibe. I don't know if it was exactly Ivy League, but that
Operation
was the vibe.
Katie, SEC school.
Yeah. So, like, I think to go back to what you're saying, though, like, mm-hmm. what I definitely was ticking boxes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, a lot
you
of
You were
my,
following a formula.
And definitely, I mean, you were like, definitely... if you look at my early career, like, I'm at Google, I'm at Microsoft, like, ticking the boxes.
Institutional
even though I was, like,
prestige.
Yeah. And even, like, I thought I was going to be a social justice attorney. I then sort of transitioned into, I'd had an internship in finance. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be in this space. And actually, I had gotten, like, an offer at JP Morgan for an internship. And I'd accepted it. And like last minute, I got an offer at Google. And so like I switched over. That was maybe like my first shift that felt like a bold shift. I was in all these leadership programs that were like finance and consulting. And I was like, but I discovered tech. And that was like the first boring.
What year
bold,
was that?
Like,
because I'm just trying to
place it. It was like the last year of college. So 2012, 2011.
So you saw, but then that's, to me, that's impressive. Not because it was like Google, but because you kind of were on the front end of that big, you saw tech as an opportunity, a space with opportunity before everyone kind of realized that that's what it was.
Interesting. I don't think it was before everyone realized because like in this current wave.
Well, I just mean kids that are in college now are like, yeah I want to work at Google. Kids into that 2010 wanted
kids
to work at JP
now,
Morgan.
I think want to be entrepreneurs. They're like, screw even Google. Like this is the other thing about parents too, because when they came up, entrepreneurship was not cool.
It is sexy now.
It is cool. It's like the cool thing to do now, but they didn't like, I don't think our parents experienced entrepreneurship.
Do you think tech made it cool? I think tech was the shift. Is that people saw, I think millennials saw people like Zuckerberg becoming billionaires off something they made in their dorm room and were like, well, F everything else. I'm going to do my own thing. That's clearly like, almost like, I think our parents and those that came before us, like my dad with a pension, saw the safe and steady path. Because his dad had a lot of like bouts. I mean, it was like he did not come from a stable home. And so I think he was like, I need to have stability and I want to provide that for my kid.
Yep.
But I think they saw that stable path as like, okay, if I just make the right decisions and I get a couple base hits, I'll eventually get to score.
Yeah.
And I think millennials saw the board game and said, I'm mixing metaphors now, but saw it and said, base hits are not going to work anymore. Yeah. I have to hit the home run right away. And I think
take a bet on myself.
I got to take the bet. I think tech and that
what
kind
is
of
Gen
movement.
Z saying now? They're just like,
I think Gen Z says, Gen Z says, we don't want to work anymore.
We just want to work on our emotional health, which I'm with.
Yeah. I think Gen Z sees the whole thing as like a,
y'all in here trapped in the matrix.
Yeah. I think millennials were like the last wave of like, I think millennials are very hustle focused. And I think Gen Z is very like balance
I wish
focused.
I was less hustle focused. I think I still am balance focused, but inside of still like a constraint that like I probably would love to let go.
Back out of a little bit. Well, do you think that, I mean, how much of that was your upbringing though?
Oh, for sure.
Right? The binder? What?
The
Operation
binder, the
Terra
stress.
Ivy League? Like, you've been groomed to get to this point where
for
you're like
sure.
achievement oriented.
For sure. Achievement oriented and also like finding my own path and making a thing work oriented. Like, my parents growing up had this thing where like they didn't give me money. And if I wanted to have money, I'd find a chore. There was demand for negotiate for the demand, right? And like, why I was the right person to fill it. So I think
your parents sound awesome.
They're lovely. TBH. I like my, you know what's been really nice? So speaking of parent support, one thing that I am very privileged to have that I think lots of people don't have is like my parents, particularly early in my business, like my dad, for example, he and I kind of like bonded around business. Mm. And there are a couple like one-liners and tips that he's given me around business that I don't think most people get from their parents.
For sure.
Like, for example, my dad being like, I'm glad to hear everything's going well in the business. Remember, this is a really great time to get an extended line of credit.
Oh my God. Wow.
Or you're as a CEO and a COO, you guys stand back to back at the front of the door of the business. And the CEO's job is to go out and go get opportunities out. And the COO's job is to go in. And, you know, you can kind of mix up some of those roles, but often that's a typical structure. So remember that.
Oh my God. Like, that's amazing.
Like that... though, like, there's a couple liners that I've gotten from my dad mm-hmm. that, like, I don't think are normal parent.
No.
I'm starting as an entrepreneur, like, advice.
What about, I mean, did they support you through college? Like, did you have to take out loans or were they, like, they were with it?
This was definitely a debate. So Columbia and most of the Ivy Leagues have these systems where you can't take out a certain amount. You can't, like, go over a certain amount of loans, and it's, like, based on parent income. My parents are separated, so my mom very much felt like we should help, and, like, I'll take out loans if we need to help you with this. My dad was like, I paid for my college, you pay for yours.
Oh, wow.
And I think that kind of, I don't think he was trying to be mean around it. Like, I think my dad's always trying to, like, structure something well, and a lesson.
He saw that was, like, he saw that as the best thing for you.
Yeah, I think it's in the same line of thinking for him as, like, I'm not just going to give you money. Find a chore that there's a demand for. It kind of fit in that kind of lesson structure.
Yeah.
So I did have loans. My mom took out some loans for me. I also took out loans and I paid them off
later. Was there scholarship involved? Because I
had
like
some scholarship. I had some scholarship.
That's a steep tuition.
Yeah. No, Columbia is super expensive. I graduated a semester early.
Oh my gosh.
To like reduce the cost.
Nice.
And I essentially had planned to like do a study abroad semester. So I had planned all of my credits so I can essentially mainly chill on my study abroad semester. Mm-hmm. So I just, instead of that, took that and just was like, I finished everything. I'm done. So it was always the plan to like try to finish early to try to reduce that cost too.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. 'Cause I do feel like that's a big piece of kind of how people, I don't know. I can imagine. I didn't have loans.
Yeah.
I did have a full scholarship out of state. So my tuition was paid for, but my parents supported my like cost of living and stuff, but they would always harp on that. Throughout college, I didn't really get it at the time because I didn't know anything about money at the time. But they were like, you don't understand how big of a deal it is that you're going to graduate without debt.
It's a big deal. Yeah,
it is. And now I see that because now I talk to people all the time who feel like I am having a hard time making progress because I graduated with this massive liability. And usually when you take out a lot of debt as a young person, there's an asset attached to it that is like a house, right? Or like you have a lot of debt, but there's something else on the balance sheet. And student loans, like your human capital is the asset. But unless that human capital can command it, like the whole system is so unbalanced in that way where there's really no relationship between how much you can earn. So I was just curious kind of how that worked for you and if that was, I mean, I guess if you got right in at Google, probably not.
It worked out comfortably for me, but I think it only worked out comfortably for me mainly. Okay, I never had lower paying jobs.
Right,
I finished school with relatively, like, I think my first job out of college, I think the like offer was like $89K. Whew. And my dad was like, you better sign that before they realize you just graduated from undergrad and not an MBA. I think they might have mixed it up. You better sign that. Sign that offer letter.
No takes, he's back.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think I had a lot of privilege in that, but I also think like I don't know how I would have paid that off without entrepreneurship.
Oh,
I paid that off with entrepreneurship money. I like paid my interest pretty much with job money.
Bro.
I like, you know, because like as you make payments, most of it goes to the interest.
Yeah.
I was making interest payments primarily with that money. We had in COVID, lots of like online businesses grew a lot. There was extra cash. I paid off all of my loans and all of my mom's.
Oh, the ones that your mom took out for you.
The ones my mom took out for me.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and my mom was like, I kind of want to do some other things. Like, it kind of, like, freed up stuff for her. Right? And that like, was such a, like, great moment for me, too. I love that.
So you at this point, do you feel like, so you financially supported her, not the other way around.
Well,
in a sense.
In this scenario, she financially supported me first because she took out those loans
for me. And yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so I did. And I think like, you know, we had a conversation about this too. I have a lot of friends actually who in some capacity support their parents, right? In entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And I have a friend who is a financial advisor and she was like, let me tell you what happens with my clients. And this is like not the only dividing line, but like she was making a generalization that like my white clients are like, I asked them like, do we need to plan in the financial plan for supporting your family? And they're like, what? what do you mean? Like my, yeah. like if my parents would, they'll help yeah. me if I need it, but like, what do you mean? And her Black and Latina clients and other like, people of other backgrounds were like, yep, like, let's talk about the plan. Like, here's what I'm already doing. Here's what the bills are. Here's how I'm already supporting. I think my mom in particular was like really conscious about like, oh, we're wow. not going to do that. It's not like, it's not your job to support me. And my parents are not uncomfortable. I have had opportunities where I've like supported family, supported friends, supported partners. Like that's for sure happened. But I'm curious to hear like what you think about that. Like when you think about the concept of supporting family.
Well,
I'm just curious.
I do fit the stereotype. I fit the trope. You know, I think that that is something that I was not really aware of until I started doing Money with Katie. And having,
what did you think when I said supporting family?
I was like emotionally, like it did not occur to me. Well, and when you asked me that, but I know that that happens, but yes, yeah. it was so outside my frame of reference. And it wasn't until I started meeting people through Money with Katie who would, you know, contact me and be like, hey, what do? I am my parents' retirement plan. And now yeah. I'm making good money. And like
it's
they
hard to be two people's retirement.
They are
plans.
Expecting me, like my success professionally to them, it's like the most heartbreaking one is like, I have siblings, I am the successful one. And so everyone just assumes that yeah. I'm gonna bankroll our parents, and like everyone else has kind of abdicated responsibility. So I know it happens, and I think that it didn't occur to me until I would hear things like that, and until you even framed the question to me, and I'm like, wait, what? For supporting? Like, and hearing that you know, hearing a financial planner be like, yes, this is something that I have generally noticed to be true at the aggregate with everybody I talk yeah. to. I think that it's a huge, huge, both mental and financial benefit that I have an edge, really, yeah. that like, I yeah. didn't do anything to earn or deserve, but I'm very aware that it's there, that if everything went to shit, I yeah. could go be like, hey, mom and dad, which is not a safety net that everybody has. In fact, yeah. I think it's more unlikely that you would have that. It's more unusual to have that than not.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
it's been a huge, me kind of understanding how big of a deal that is yeah. in the last couple of years.
I have friends who have a lot of their family on payroll. Mm. What do you think about that? Have you ever thought about that? Like hiring a family member? I generally think it's a terrible idea.
See, I was going to say that like I have some, like my husband is an attorney yeah. and I have joked with him in the past about like, okay, when you get out of the Air Force, you should be Money with Katie General Counsel. Like I'll make jokes about
Don't
that.
Don't do it.
He's like, hell
Don't
no.
Don't do it. Don't
Not
do
interested.
It.
But I think I kind of like the idea in theory, but I think in practice it would be very messy.
So here's a scenario where I think it does make sense. I think you have to, like, there has to be two things happening. One, you have to have extra cash.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've had scenarios where, like, I had family members or something where, like, okay, we need to pull back on costs. And, like, frankly, they usually are, like, the first ones who need to go, right? So first that. But also, like, I think it's better that they not actually be working on anything. Like, if you're going to do it.
Like, universal basic income, but for your family.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think there are scenarios. Okay, like, let's think about this scenario. Money with Katie blows up. It's just making buku cash such that, like, one of your big jobs now is to figure out what to do to deploy all the cash.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a real thing. Like, yeah. as your business grows and gets more profitable, like,
oh,
you have to think about it, right? What to do to deploy all the cash.
Yeah.
In that scenario, it does make sense to, like,
because then you're helping
them. You have a partner
them.
Who's working a job, and it does, like that, or a friend or family or whatever, and like that, it doesn't really make sense for them to be on a 9-to-5 grind, given that like there's all this work to do to deploy capital, and like it's just a different thing. And there are like wealthy families where this is a real thing. So I do think that's a scenario in future state where like if you got extra cash, and you're kind of trying to figure out how to deploy the extra cash, like that makes sense.
Mm.
I also think it is unlikely that the person in your family is the most qualified person.
For sure. For sure. There's no chance.
That's the best person for the job is unlikely. And so, like, I've even had this transition. I used to work with my mom as my CPA, and I think we sort of outgrew our
relationship. Because she was too conservative.
She's
too much of a rule follower.
My mom is a rule.
You're like, no, no, follower. No, we're pushing the boundaries.
And just by like general like spirit practice, that doesn't mesh with me. Like I'm like, okay, great, let's be legal, but what else can we do? Mm-hmm. So I think actually that wasn't all of it. I think first of all, it was really hard for my mom not to see me as her daughter.
Yeah. Right?
And by the way, like when my mom was my accountant, I barely paid her. Like it wasn't like a big money exchange.
Yeah.
It was really hard for her not to see me as her daughter. So like my taxes were kind of like the last to get done. Like just like she just like I wasn't like high priority client, because I think the mental shift of like, this is my kid, this is my client, okay, now the meeting's over, and now you're like, mm-hmm. she would be calling me little girl in the meetings. Like it just like
I'm sure you love that. Yeah, that like just, that does not
my
sound...
mom calls me little girl like it's my name. So yeah so like I think we had to transition that. And also there were things that I started to get into, like there's like I have all these customers and multiple different states, and like we started just getting into things. I was buying
it.
I got a crypto mining rig.
You outgrew it.
And like we just outgrew that. And like my mom knows lots, but not about crypto mining rigs. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that we kind of transitioned that.
Yeah.
So I think if they're not working on anything is ideal scenario and you got a lot of cash, then I can kind of support.
Now that's something though that I'm like, is that legal? Like to put someone on payroll? I guess you could, who's not doing anything. Someone on payroll who's not actually an employee.
Listen, most companies have lots of people who are doing almost nothing anyway. So, like, sure, like, I think on paper, there's a job that they do. They produce a thing, they created a thing, but it's not illegal to overpay someone.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. All right, we'll be right back to talk about this a little bit more. And I actually want to ask you about friends, too, after a quick break. I'm curious how you, almost advice about this, if I'm being honest. I feel like, I don't know if it's an obsessive personality or if it was just the fact that I moved somewhere else around the same time that I was starting everything up, but I feel pretty good about my familial relationships. Yeah. I feel like what really suffered as a result of the, I would say, moderate success that I started to find is that I really allowed basically all of my friendships to really take a backseat. So I had a really hard time prioritizing a social life, really, because it didn't feel possible to do both. You ever seen that triangle that's like, pick two? You can sleep, you can have friends,
but you can't have it all.
Can you? Like, I feel
What are the three you can...
I think typically the meme is used in college, where it'll be like, you can have a social life, you can get good grades, or you can sleep. And you can only ever have two of the three.
What's the equivalent here? Like, you can have a successful business.
You can take care of yourself.
And you can have
Or you can have good relationships with other people. And I think...
Do you feel like you have all three right now?
It's a constant trade-off, and I don't even have kids, which is where I feel like a lot of people really hit where it becomes really complicated. But no, I just think that like there was a point at the end of last year where things were going really well for me professionally, but I just kind of had this moment where I was like, oh my God, I feel like I don't, aside from my husband who I lived with, and even then we would like spend the weekends both working on different things. I felt like I had totally allowed my personal life and my social life to fall apart a little bit. And I had to like, I ended up, this was the fun thing. I ended up taking three of my closest friends to Tulum and just like paying for all of them, be like, let's just all go. Cause I feel to like reconnect.
You can't brush past the baller moveness of what you just said.
It was one of the best things I've ever done.
You took all of your friends to Tulum.
All
like,
three of them.
I got it. I got this. Daddy's got it.
Daddy's got it. But it was fun. It was fun to spend the money on that. It was fun to go and get to like treat them to that. And I think it helped me feel like, okay, I am prioritizing them, but that's obviously not a sustainable, like you can't take people on trips every month. So it's, I'm just curious kind of how you approach relationships because you're always all over the place. You're constantly traveling. Like, what do you,
I have a friend group that I really love right now. This is actually like the first season of my life where I really feel like I have a squad. I do feel like I'm in a season where it's morphing and moving because I think we're all sort of moving in different directions. Mm-hmm. But interestingly enough, I think that squadness got sparked by a trip to, where did we go? We went to like, and we were in the Dominican Republic.
Okay. Right?
And it was for my birthday, and also like hosted a thing. I was like, I'll pay for everything, like get a humongous house. Like, so I love
yeah.
it. Sometimes it's nice to like treat your friends, and if you can, mm-hmm. it's wonderful. And I like yeah. realize we're having a very it's like privileged thing. Conversation, but it's also like, we have to talk about the like highs and lows and the aspirations of it all too, right?
Yeah.
So I do think on that trip, like there was a lot of like bonding of that group. I do have a good number of friends who like to travel. So one of the ways that I like stay connected with them was kind of just to like, let's meet here and do like a weekend together. I've been trying to get you to do this and like... Guys, Katie doesn't want to hang out with me.
This is what I'm saying. I have such a hard time. I have a hard time doing things that are like just fun. I don't know what it is. I think that I have to get over that.
So I travel a lot, but I'm working. I'm not vacationing. I think people really have a hard time. They're like, oh, you're on vacation. I'm like, I'm not on vacation. I'm just like living
working
from somewhere else. So like I always have my laptop. So I don't take a lot of like full vacation time, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just sort of like somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think...
Do you feel like, did you ever, are the friends that you have now the same friends that you had when you started?
Hell no.
Yeah, like how has this?
Hell no.
Did you feel like once you started to, because okay.
We started what? Started entrepreneurship?
Okay, so we've talked a lot at this point about how this, the process of kind of going out on your own and figuring it out, it is a bit of a mirror. It makes you look at yourself differently. It makes you see the world differently.
Yeah.
You kind of have to face your shit a little bit in a way that I think you don't always have to until you start like wrestling. So I'm just curious. Like
face your shit and also be actively growing. Like
yes.
active pursuit of personal growth.
And so did you feel like there was a moment at which you looked around and said, this, I'm not, like, I can't.
Yes. I think my... active pursuit of personal growth
mm-hmm.
means that I pretty quickly outgrow people in relationships.
Okay.
And I
noted
think it's
for the
a
future.
Trade-off that, like, I realize I have to make of, like, I'm in the personal growth gym regularly. And that means that, like, inevitably, like, I can't expect everybody around me to want to be in the gym like that all
mm-hmm.
the time. But, like, I just might have gains that you don't have.
Gains. That's a good little euphemism.
Gym bro gains.
I like gym bro
yeah.
gains.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, I even can go back, right? Like, I think a lot of people, for example, have the same friends from, like, high school, middle school. It doesn't even, like, I can't even imagine, like, I love those people. I just can't, it just doesn't make sense for me to, like, for example, the same friends I had in middle school, for those to be my best friends now. And so I can kind of trace multiple time periods where, like, I just sort of grew to a different person. And also, like, this is going to sound kind of, like, mean, where, like, if you're in a community of people, not, like, some people sort of rise up and grow and some people kind of, like, stay where they are. And most people in life stay where they are at all times. Like, most people don't grow that much in a lifetime. So I do think I am currently, like, thinking about, like, what do I want to do to, like, have more people around me that are, like, actively inspired? I think right now, like, that's one thing I'm really trying to lean into. Not just it being about money and, like, I'm doing business.
Right.
But, like, I'm in my zone
of genius
and inspired by my life. I'm inspired by my life.
Okay, I like that.
I'm in my joy. I'm not, like, in this energy of constriction. I think I'm in the active pursuit of friends right now that are fully in that, because I'm trying to be more in that. And it's really hard to be anything if your people around you are not there.
Yes. So I have this guy friend named Ben who founded this company called Chronify.
Yeah.
And he was back in Fort Collins where he lives. We would like get lunch every month. And he was talking to me about this once because he is kind of similarly minded as to kind of what you're describing, but also just this idea of like in the early days of starting something that you feel very passionately about, it can be, and he has three kids. He's like, it can be very difficult. In if left unstructured or left to chance, I won't talk to people for like 6 months.
I won't leave the house for like multiple
weeks. He basically said, and I just think this is so funny and this is so him, but he sat down and he made a list of all the people that he considers a good friend.
Yeah.
And then he made himself think about like, what do I like about them? How do I feel when I'm around them? How does the idea of talking to them every week or every other week make me feel?
Enrich
does it feel like
and,
a chore? Or does that excite me? And he said that he basically just took everyone that he said he felt excited by and kind of like that he felt like the relationship was really good for both of them. That he was like, okay, once I've identified those people, I'm setting up set times. There's a cadence. It's either we're talking every month on the last Friday, or like his like closest friends will be like every Wednesday for 45 minutes. We'll just make sure we have a call. And I think that that's really nice because I hate to use the word operationalize in your personal life, but I think if everything else in your life is so structured, but this is not, it automatically is always going to become the second priority.
I have two standing calls on my calendar like every other week. They're slightly different energies. I have a call with my friend Danielle that is like every other Wednesday, and the title of the calendar event is like Tara, Danny, what inspires us, little like magic emojis.
Yeah.
And so we talk about the things that are like livening us up and inspiring us. Yeah. And sometimes they're work stuff, sometimes they're not. Like, but the topic is like what's livening you up right now.
I love that there's like even a structure within the structure of like this is the purpose, this is the energy you bring to this.
There's no like we have to talk about these things.
But it's like the purpose is to kind of pour into one another a little bit.
You know what
it's
particularly good for? I have to, at some point before the meeting, go, what is inspiring?
Yeah.
And that keeps me more in a state of inspiration, because it's so easy to like go in life and maybe you're feeling inspired, but you're not like acknowledging it or like remembering it.
Or cultivating it too. I think that there is, I think, a misconception that inspiration or motivation like finds you and that it's like a passive experience. But I do think that what you're describing, I have this friend named Kate who is very positive, and she's also a business owner. And so for a while there, we were getting on calls. We just called them little masterminds where we would get together for an hour and we would bring things. But it was a genuine friendship, but I also did find her very inspiring and always left those calls with like a little nugget. And I thought that it was so mutually beneficial. We really should start doing it again, honestly. But I do think that I think I realized something about friendships in the last like year or two, where there was kind of a dividing line almost between, I had some people in my life where it felt like when we spoke, it was always kind of negative, might be a strong word, but like people that really focused on...
They have funky energy.
It felt like it was always very certain, like, this is what's going wrong. Almost like a victim, woe is me.
And
then I had friends that were very much like, you know, I was thinking about this, and hey, like, I've been dealing with this, and so here's what I'm doing to fix it. And like, they kind of brought a different, like, I have no control over my situation, or like, here's how I'm actively trying to improve my situation. And I just found myself actively gravitating more toward the latter. Right?
Well, obvious reasons. I don't want to say of course, because lots of people like have people around them like that, and they're like, oh, we'll let them stay. I feel like I have really strong boundaries and also low tolerance for that. So like, if I'm not feeling
someone... Oh, you've called me out before.
What?
There was one day we were talking about something and I was kind of complaining. I was having a little pity party. And you're like, you go, I can't listen to this anymore. What are we going to do about it? You go, I'm over it. But it was good. It kind of snapped me out of it. And I think sometimes if you don't have someone that's going to be like, all right, I've heard enough. Like,
and if you do it too much, I'll just stop being friends.
Yeah.
That's kind of how, like, it does anyone. It's not just you. I just kind of can't handle that.
Yeah.
And I'm really like, I think a lot about lifestyle design.
Yeah.
And this like active pursuit of designing what's around you. For me, it's like designing things around me that inspire me, that are beautiful, but also not having people around me with funky attitudes all the time. And like, obviously people have bad days, right? You can have funky attitudes sometimes, but like a consistent average state funky attitude, no. And so I think like for me, that's part of my lifestyle design.
And I think that you in a third person sense.
One
forgets sometimes, I think, the impact that, I mean, I do fully ascribe
of
to
having
that.
The right person around
of
you.
Of that idea of like, you are the average of the five people you hang out with. So for example, my husband, I am very easily triggered by like trolls online. It is something I'm actively working on, is that if people come at me, people are mean. People will say very specific pointed things. And it feels like, you know, people online can like sniff the insecurity on you, or will
go right
for that sensitive spot. And I am very easily antagonized. I've gotten better, I have to say. Yeah. I have really improved. So I'm going to give myself that. But I always felt like I had to defend myself, or I had to basically clap back. I always wanted the moment of like the clap back. And my husband would always be like, that is so beneath you to even acknowledge them. Like, don't even give them the, that's what they want you to do. Don't for a second waste your energy on that. Why would you?
That is so beneath you is a great line too, mm-hmm. because I think it says something about how he sees you is up here.
Mm, right? Yeah.
And also like having people that, cause sometimes you can't see yourself.
Yeah.
And having people who see you is maybe a little bit bigger than you see yourself.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like that's that line implies that, and I love that.
Yeah, and you know what? I give him credit, too, because sometimes they've come at him in the past, mm-hmm. on my personal page, no less.
Yeah.
And I will get defensive of him and want to clap back on his behalf. Yeah. And he'll go, don't feed the trolls. He's like, who cares? Delete, yeah. block, report. Like, move on. Don't give it a second thought. So I think he puts his money where his mouth is, but it has been, it's like, if I was with somebody that was very much like, oh, you got to tell, like,
yeah.
It would pull me in really quickly if someone was enabling that behavior of mine.
I how long have you guys been together?
We started dating in January of 2018. We got married in June of 2021. So it's going on 6 years.
When you were initially dating,
mm-hmm.
was that something that you were looking for? Like someone who like saw you as big as you are? Like, was that a criteria?
No. I was 23. I was like, oh, he's cute.
He's cute.
In law school. And like, he was very
smart.
He's very cute. Aloof and like kind of introverted. Ooh. And I'm the opposite. And so I like, I really liked the chase, I think. I was not in a place.
Him chasing you or you chasing
me? Me chasing him. Because he was very hard to read. And I think I was like, oh, you know, this is like a challenge. But I think when I look back on that time, because I did work full time at that point, what's funny is that on our very first date, he was like, so I found your blog. And I was like, what? Because I had a different blog back then. It's a personal blog where I would just like publish random stuff. He's like, yeah, it's good. And I was like, oh, thanks. And then like, I would say a year into dating, when I was more into the personal finance thing, he was like, you need to write a book about this. Like, he was very much a hype man about all of this from day one. So he kind of saw
having
the potential.
A partner that is your hype person is... Whew, that makes such a difference.
I had a
hard day the other day, and my partner called me and like gave me the like most epic pep talk. And he's like, listen, you are in a lioness. Sometimes people are not comfortable around lionesses. Sometimes people are cubs. And you know, like, he's just like pumping me up. And I like, goes, yeah, that's right. And he goes, you just like keeping your lioness
energy. Hell yeah.
Stay in your queenness. But like someone, like in order for someone to support you like that, they have to see you as that, right?
And they can't be threatened by that.
And can be threatened by that. Okay, so girl, the relationship that I'm in now has been, like, we've been together for a year. About a year and a half, year and 8 months ago, I got really intentional and serious and, like, designy about how I was dating, and I made a scorecard.
You're gonna tell me you manifested this person?
I'm more so saying that, like, I had a scorecard.
You knew what you were looking
to, like,
for.
I had to get serious about it. So there's not that many things on the scorecard. There's, like, 5 things on the scorecard.
What are they?
Okay, my dating scorecard is a lifestyle designer. Like, they actively design their own life. They're not in, like, victimness. And I also have, like, I hired a, a matchmaker, and she was not getting me the right, what I wanted. I now am like not that, like, I don't know how I feel about matchmaking. I think with the gender dynamic for women.
Yeah.
But she was not getting it. So then I made a rubric of like, here's what a 5 is, here's what a 1 is, right? But lifestyle design.
It's just the most terror thing ever of like,
I have to be clear about what
you,
I'm asking
that's
for.
A you. That's
clear
you.
On my
You're
asks.
Good at that because you'll go, okay, the problem is not them. The problem is that I'm not giving the right instruction. I'm not delegating properly. So let me refine what I'm asking.
Personal accountability when someone's underperforming, it's on me. I missed something. Let me communicate differently. And it, if anything, it's on me that I'm not firing them. That's the last on me. But active lifestyle designer, committed to their introspective personal growth.
Okay, love.
And like a 5 is like, I've seen them over like at least a year actively work on their personal growth and sort of evolve as a person. Like, I've seen it. What else is on there? There are other things, like, for example, there's a entrepreneurship income line item, not just because of like pure income, but because like I realized that I do better with a partner who is also an entrepreneur.
Okay.
And entrepreneurial.
Okay.
And I think that maybe that's my shortcut way of, like, someone who has, like, their own thing and is not threatened by my thing. Mm. I think there's lots of really strong people who are not entrepreneurs who are, like, I'm fine with someone who's really big. I just find that they're maybe, like, harder to find of non-entrepreneurs.
I got you.
So, like, that was a line item on there. And if not, like, you got to be on partner track or something like that. So you have your own big thing going on. Sorry, not sorry. So, like, those are the kinds of things on my scorecard. But really, like, I think those things lead themselves to someone who has space to see me for myself. And when I'm having a bad day, can be supportive as opposed to, like, me being big, making them feeling small.
Do you ever find that because you are, we'll say, big, you know, like, you've big energy, big goals, you're very ambitious, you're making things happen.
Yeah.
Do you find, though, that that means that if the other person is the same way, that it's hard to prioritize one another? Or, like, how is that, how does that work? Because I
was feel
like
worried
I'm picturing kind of two people that are very much, like, go-getter, all about, you know, making things happen. But then it's, like, how do you kind of come back together and make sure that...
We run the plays together. We're, like, here's what we're doing as, like, a couple. Here's what we're doing as a household. Like, it's bonding to do it. And also, like, we both can talk to each other about our businesses, right? Like, we'll be, like, hey, like, we need to, like, downsize a little bit. Like, great, let's pull up the P&L. Like, let's work through it together. Like, what about this cost? He's got, like, I got a framework for you. Here's what I do.
That's nice.
When this happens to me, here's what happened when I sold my company. Like, let me talk to you about that. So, like, we really kind of know about the same things, or we know about different things, but, like, in the same space. And also we have very, like, entrepreneurial approaches to the relationships. We definitely have, like, board. We have, like, a monthly check-in. We got this, I think there's, like, a venture investor who does this. We have monthly meetings where we give each other a score on how we're feeling in the relationship out of 10 and, like, share what's working, not working for us and, like, how it feels. So the other person has active feedback. And it's generally, like, safe space. No one's upset. Usually you know when your partner's at a low number.
Yeah.
Like, you know when
it's
they're not
a surprise.
If you have any level of self-awareness, you know that the person who lives in the house with you is not feeling the situation right.
Interesting.
Now. Right. See, but why and understanding the nuances is useful.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think we've joked about doing something monthly before, but I think we both felt like that was too much for us.
Yeah.
Like, to do it every single month. It was like, I think we were kind of joking about how we'd be, like, coming up with, like, almost stuff, shining more of a spotlight on something that sometimes not everything needs to get talked about. So I think that we've kind of shifted in the other direction, but I do think from a financial standpoint, we
you guys
run
have financial,
like,
planning meetings.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so
I saw you on Instagram, like, had, like,
and we have the, like, weekly family meeting, but it's more about, like, what does your week look like?
You have a weekly family meeting.
Yeah, it's not so much retrospective as it is proactively planning for the week.
So it'll be like,
what does your week look like? Is this going to be a, you know, an easy, medium, or hard?
Yeah.
What nights are you going to need more, you know, what nights should we be doing this?
Is it like a set time that you regularly
usually
do?
Usually it's Sunday afternoons.
Sunday afternoon chat.
Which is nice. So
if you have, like, annual and a weekly, then you, like, that's great.
Yeah, but we aren't really sitting down and being like, how do you feel about the last month? And how can I, as a partner, I don't know if that's, it's just so funny.
Yeah.
It sounds like very therapy-esque to me. And I think there's probably a lot of benefit to be gained, but I think that it's, like, not our style, almost.
Yeah, I get,
like,
that. I'm very therapy-esque in general. So, like, I'm very, like, let's be intentional and therapy-esque. And
yeah.
So, like, that.
But we do have our annual board meeting about money.
What happens in the board meeting?
So we sit down with every month we do fill out my wealth planner.
Yeah.
My product that we both use.
Dog
Google
food,
Sheet,
your own product.
Shared.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So we both will fill that out so that we can see where all the money is going, what we're investing in, how our net worth is changing, what we're, like, where we need to pull back. And then at the end of
this with him,
it's amazing. At the end of the year, we now have 12 months of data, and we basically will sit down, and I like to put it in a spreadsheet. I mean, I'm sorry, in a deck. Like, I like to present it and be like, these are the findings, because I like to take the data,
the findings and the data,
and turn them into insights. I'm like, how do we actually now use these to make better decisions?
Got it. This is, by the way, why my meeting structure feels too, like, woo-woo, touchy-feely, because you're like, I need data. If we don't have any data for the meeting, cancel the meeting.
Yeah. Where's the agenda? So yeah, then I'll like present it and I'll be like, this is what's going on. And then we'll talk about the things that we think need to change, or he'll be like, oh, we're projected to hit that. Interesting. What happens if
we do projections together?
We do projections. Well, because I think we have this shared vision of like, we would like to be fully financially independent.
Yeah.
We don't want to have to work for income. We want to be in a place where the work that we're doing is based on what we want to be doing and not like, I need to do this because I need the income.
Yeah.
And so we're actively pursuing that point at which we could live off of the money we have saved and invested. And so we have, you know, the 3 year kind of 3 to 5 year plan.
Yeah.
And so it's important though to be like, are we tracking toward that? Or have we strayed? Are there things that we're doing that are getting us further away from that?
Before you met him, I wanted to ask you, have you encountered people that you've dated that were not comfortable with your bigness? But I'm curious if before 23, you felt your own bigness.
Didn't.
You weren't connected
actually,
to it.
Actually, funny enough, I'm thinking of two people in particular. One was not really a boyfriend. One was more of like a situationship type, he was never actually my boyfriend, but he was a couple years older than me.
Yeah.
And he was already working in San Francisco when I was still in college.
Yeah.
And so I think it's interesting when you are dating someone that you perceive to be further ahead than you, and they perceive themselves to be further ahead. So it's more of like a you stay down there. I did have another. I feel like
that dynamic can be fun, no?
Oh,
I love the idea of someone being like, oh, look, you're a little cute little business. And dating that. No.
You would not like that. What would you like about that? What would you like about someone belittling you?
No, I mean, I don't mean necessarily belittling me, but someone who's so powerful in themselves and not even necessarily that they have, it's not about the business size, but that they're so connected and centered to themselves that there's something that like I would like to get to. I think like in my
relationship now, I think that works if they see your potential.
Yeah.
And aren't constantly being like, well, not belittling you. Not head pat.
Yeah.
I think I got a lot of head pat. Previously.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
And I didn't see the bigness, we'll say. I think that through the marriage that I'm in and like through my relationship with my husband, I started to see myself a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we would joke because we didn't sign a prenup.
Yeah.
And we came in with very similar assets, but I had money with Katie. And at the time, we didn't really know what that was going to turn into.
Right.
And so, but it was like, technically, that should have been protected in a prenup. And so I'll always joke with him. I'm like, oh, you're going to get half of that if we ever get divorced. And he'll be like, well, you couldn't have done it without me. Like, he'll always joke
in a prenup,
like,
what happens after the marriage is still like split? Or I guess you can it's a contract. It's not like you get to write it however you want, right?
Yeah, you can write it however you want. But it just has become a joke where he'll be like, yeah, but I supported you. Like, but like, I helped you. And I'm like, that's actually kind of fair. Like, you definitely did, you know.
Being a partner to an entrepreneur is no joke. Like, first of all, we're crazy. Like, it just takes a little bit of, like, craziness to even do. And also just, like, the highs and lows of it all, like, I feel like we probably are more volatile than the average person.
100%.
Right? And so, like, supporting that is, I would imagine,
challenging.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, probably. You know what? I think next time I want to talk about how you support yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I would like to have, and maybe not like next episode, but at some point I want to have a conversation
like
with you.
Like, self-care. I hate saying self-care because I think people
self-care
are
sounds too
bath.
Cheesy. Yeah, yeah, no. I'm not talking like face masks. I just mean like you've kind of touched on it a little bit today of like how the friends that you are, like, you're very intentional about the people you're spending time with, and you're very thoughtful about how you're spending that time too, so that it is very uplifting.
Yeah.
And I want to know, like, I'm sure there are practices and mantras and things that you do or practices that you have that help you, as your partner put it, like, stay in the queenness.
Stay in the queenness.
And I think that's important. So are you cool to talk about that next
time? Yeah. Let's definitely talk about like staying in your power and staying in your queenness. I love that.
Okay. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, I also really want to hear like this conversation that we've had about like supporting family being supportive of you, just that whole conversation. I really want to hear like what folks listening to this, like what their experiences have been.
Yeah.
So if you guys can like share and comment, we want to hear stories about like how this is working for you.
Absolutely. And that is all for this week's episode of Bossy. So thanks for tuning in. That was a great conversation. My wheels are turning.
Well, okay, what was the line? Stay in your queenness.
Stay in your queenness.
Stay in your queenness.
That's the
y'all.
Theme. That's the theme for
That's
the week.
The theme. Stay in your queenness. Stay in your queenness.
Bye.
Bye.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.